This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're talking about efforts to improve literacy among young people in Indiana. And with us now, we have Charles Cole III, founder and executive director of Energy Converters and co-host and co-founder of the Eight Black Hands podcast. Shale Weidenbach, Simon Early Literacy Specialist at Indianapolis Public Library. And Patrick Jones, senior vice president of leadership and equity at the Mind Trust. Thank you to all of you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Happy to be here.
I'll start with Shale. How big of a problem is illiteracy in Indiana, particularly when we talk about early childhood? Is there a way to tell if this is going to be a difficult path for someone?
Well, there are about 19% of adults in Indiana have limited or low literacy at this point. And so by hitting kids at the time in their life when they're acquiring those literacy skills, that is the most powerful way to do that. And honestly, in Indiana, we don't have mandatory kindergarten even. Students don't have to go to school until they're seven. So there's a big gap in what some children with more privilege can experience in terms of high quality early childhood experiences. So those things lead to the inequities that I think we see in the adults.
Well, when it comes to Indiana, do you see that we're better off than other states when it comes to early childhood, or are we lagging?
You know, that's an interesting question. Because we don't require it, it's only in the past probably decade that we've really started measuring what are the success of our early literacy. So I would say that, but compared across the nation, we're kind of in the middle. The Midwest is kind of in the middle. And so we're not awful, but we can certainly improve.
And Patrick, can you tell us about the Go Farther Literacy Fund?
Yeah, so the Go Farther Literacy Fund is an opportunity for parents specifically. We're looking at community organizations as well, but we're really interested in parents and parent-like figures, grandmothers, uncles, aunts, to really invest in literacy within their household and in their communities. And so the fund is $50,000, and we're looking at giving out amounts of $150 to $5,000 to parents and community members looking to improve literacy within their communities. Believe in things like the science of reading, making sure we're teaching reading through phonics and early literacy, but also the love of reading. And I think sometimes that gets missed. We can't get to the science of reading till we get to the love of reading. And that happens in our household with the people who know best. I think in a lot of ways, sometimes we forget about the parents are the first teachers. And they continue to be those first teachers all the way. They're the consistent teacher all the way through a child is 18 and beyond. And so investing in those folks are the way we attack this literacy crisis. And what Shale was talking about in terms of just under 19%, the number is like one in six Hoosiers in particularly read at fifth grade level or below. When you put it out of percentages and put it to one in every six, think about every six people you meet, one person in that six cannot read beyond the fifth grade level. That's problematic. And when you look at like the age old story goes, like if that's true for the entire population, that means when we're talking about the Black population or we're talking about the Latinx population, they're basically we're talking about emergency room status there. And so this is something that we care deeply about at the Mind Trust. Like I said, the application's open and we're looking for families in Center Township to go ahead and apply. And build your libraries, build your reading circles, and all the projects that I'm not even talking about or thinking of. This is for y'all.
Yeah, and I'd like to speak to that, you know, really the power of the caregiver in this situation. We're going to hear from Dr. Cole, and I mean, he really was able to pull himself up individually and make a difference in his own life. But most people don't have that sort of fortitude, right? And so educating parents that, you know, just by singing to your child, just by talking to them at the grocery store, talk to them while you're changing their diaper. I mean, all of these things can have a profound effect on a child's ability to read. So I'm right on with you, Patrick, that just getting that word out to parents everywhere and caregivers, that they have a power to make a huge difference.
Charles, where does your passion for literacy come from?
Just growing up homeless and in shelters and 11 elementary schools and two drug addict parents. I mean, it's a bunch of stuff, right? But even when I was younger, I just knew it was a gateway to being able to be successful. Like, I knew I had to go to college. In order to go to college, you got to be able to read when we simplify it like that. So I just didn't want to end up doing stuff that I grew up seeing other folks do around me. And just to Michelle's point, I definitely had a community behind me. It wasn't me. And the reason why I'm just saying that, because, you know, sometimes people use that against, you know, Black folks or whatnot. But, you know, I worked extremely hard and I got extremely lucky. Both had to happen for me to even be here with you all today.
Well, when it comes to literacy, I wanted to back up a little bit. Patrick mentioned that one in six Hoosiers are at the fifth grade level of reading. Mm-hmm. Is there a misunderstanding that when we talk about literacy, we're assuming that people don't know how to read at all, but actually they do have some basic reading skills in some cases?
Yeah, that's called functional literacy, right? Like, so basically, there might be some people that can read signs or whatever. Literacy isn't just knowing how to read and write. It's knowing how to read, write, and apply in particular ways what you've written and read. So, you know, are you able to take that information and apply it and use it to the betterment of your life? That's generally what literacy is. Like, can you read something and understand it? Not just knowing the words, but actually understand what it's saying. So, you know, when we talk about literacy, I mean, here's the thing. And I'm going to be very personal with you all. My co-founder in Oakland for State of Black Education in Oakland, Dirk Tillerson, I don't know if you all know him, but, you know, he was murdered three nights ago in a home invasion. And it was probably by somebody who couldn't read. It was probably by somebody who did not have a good job. And so I'm kind of reeling from that. But I know what Dirk would say is, if we had better schools for that kid and that kid could read and that kid went to college and got a good job and had a family, and not just a good job, but like a really good salary, they probably wouldn't be casing out houses and doing robberies. Right. And just so you all know, 85% of juveniles in our system are functionally illiterate people. 70% of inmates in prisons cannot read beyond the fourth grade. And that was 105th murder for Oakland. That's a lot, right? You all had 245 in Indy last year alone. So this stuff isn't just connected to testing or whatever people like to argue on. This is a struggle for our lives. This is a struggle for the lives of people that look like me. And I believe, and part of the reason I started the Literacy Fund in Oakland, is that we have to be at the forefront and lead our own liberation. We have to be the people leading this literacy charge. And we have some brilliant people in our communities that don't get the opportunity to get money and get the chances. So sorry for all of that. I know that wasn't really as scripted, but that's just what was on my heart and what I'm dealing with as we're doing this piece right now.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, and our condolences go out to you and Dirk's family. And, you know, thank you for still being able to come on the program. I mean, that's got to be really tough to be going through at the same time.
Oh, it's the work. I mean, again, and I think if it was the other way around and Dirk and our other partner, Jamoke Hinton, and Benny, we're the ones who started that in Oakland together. But if it were the other way around, I would want them to honor me by doing the work and making sure we're preventing other young people right now from having to go that route later on in life. And there is no way that in one of the most industrialized countries and one of the most richest countries in the history of this blue rock that we have the type of literacy rates here that we do. And the fact that for Black folks always being at the bottom of it, and brown folks, like, we should be ashamed. And so we have to take some collective responsibility around that. And I've put a lot of chance and faith in systems that have never really truly loved us. And I think that there's something special about putting faith in your own people and giving them a chance to see if they can do something different.
If you have any questions or comments for our program today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We're talking about efforts to improve literacy among young people in Indiana with Charles Cole III, Shale Weidenbach, and Patrick Jones. We have just a few minutes before we jump to a break. Patrick and Shale and Charles, I don't know which of you would like to answer this, but is there a reason why we're seeing young people falling through the cracks to the point where they're functionally literate, but they're not getting all of the skills that they need?
I think, you know, first of all, what Dr. Cole said is absolutely true in terms of this is directly tied to what we're seeing in our communities. And when you talk about where young people are falling through the cracks, the type of literacy that Dr. Cole is talking about and that this data is talking about when we talk about beyond fifth grade literacy is really around the type of training in literacy that really questions why somebody is writing something. What purpose are they writing it for? How did they build what they are writing? Why is it important what they are writing? What people, you know, when I was growing up would call critical thinking. And when we read now, we're not reading for that. When we read now, we're reading, people consider reading, like you said, the functional literacy. My baby can sound out the words, or this child can read fluently, or this child understands in a basic sense what they're reading, when we really have to go beyond that. And honestly, in the Black community, the types of books that go beyond that aren't typically in the hands of our kids. And that's when we have to really talk about, you know, what's in the curriculum. We also have to talk about what types of access to books do our kids have? Do they have access to the Ta-Nehisi Coates? Or are we still reading some of the basic stuff that we can't really dig deep into that doesn't resonate with our souls that we can really ask those questions about?
Absolutely. And before we get to a break here, I was just thinking just how important it is for Black and brown communities to see representation in books, because that gives you some motivation to actually want to read, to understand what's going on, to feel like you're part of the story. I just speak from my own experience growing up, not seeing myself represented. It's hard to read books about like the Victorian times and you're like, but I'm not like that.
Right. I think decolonizing the classroom library is a wonderful a step that we need to take. I think we need to, I mean, really educating the teachers on what books do we have. And the Indianapolis Library we have the Center for Black Literature and Culture that could help with that.
Well, we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about literacy in Indiana and efforts to help more young people learn to read. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about illiteracy in Indiana and an effort to fund projects to improve literacy in the state. If you have any questions or comments for the show and for our guests, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. With us again are Charles Cole, the third founder and executive director of Energy Converters and co-host and co-founder of the Eight Black Hands podcast, Shale Weidenbach, assignment early literacy specialist at Indianapolis Public Library, and Patrick Jones, senior vice president of equity and leadership at the Mind Trust. Before the break, Shale mentioned decolonizing sort of the classroom libraries, things like that. Is that a solution, Patrick, you think that could turn things around?
Yeah, I think that's one of them. I think definitely the public library getting involved is something that, you know, our community could benefit from and all communities. I would say that I'm not entirely opposed to us reading about, Victorian literature. I think the difference is, the difference is you have to understand who you are first. It's a perspective issue, right? If I am exposed to Victorian literature first, and I don't know who I am as a person yet, and the ideologies that are explored have nothing to do with me and nothing to do with my thought process, then I can't appropriately engage with Victorian literature is the issue. And so I think, you know, when we engage kids in literacy early on, we have to engage them in their thought process, in their community, in what they see every day. And I don't mean, and I think sometimes when people hear that, they hear like books about the hood, and no, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, in our principles, in the principles that we grow up in. Some of that, for some people, that could be the hood. For some people, that could be something else. But what it is, it's all rooted in Blackness. It's all rooted in our community and our shared beliefs. And that's what has to be explored in early literacy. And it's a big part of it for sure.
Charles, what about you? What do you think?
I mean, I think it's an and question. I think we need a bunch of different things. So that with the library is fine. I got to get you to the library. You know what I mean? I think I think that's really important. What I actually think in addition to that is I think we put a lot of faith in systems that historically have not. The results show that they have not loved us or cared about us. And I think that we are beyond the point of like begging these institutions to be better and caring about us. I just need them to function. And in the instance that they can't, I need people in my community to have the understanding and skills to be able to go online or figure out ways to know what their child's reading level is. And then we can build a plan based off that. And so for instance, and I know this is a long-winded question, but I'll go quickly here. A lot of our parents, rightfully so, think that when their child gets an A in English or reading or whatnot, that would mean that they are proficient, right? Like they got an A, they passed the class. A lot of the things that I do with parents that say, no, that A does not necessarily correlate to if your child is proficient, like in that fifth grade reading class or seventh grade reading class. So one, I think that we have to decode things for our families and for our communities, the actual end users of education, so they can go out and get the things they need. So they can say things like, yo, I like what Michelle said around the library. I like, you know, those things that Patrick is working on. I like these type of comic books. But we got to start putting power back into the hands of our people because we've seen that we can't leave our babies at the whim of systems that ain't getting it done.
That's a good point. I mean, just that grades don't necessarily correlate to comprehension. I never looked at it like that. So thank you for sharing that.
Yes. And to have comprehension, you really have to have background knowledge. So not only do the books, the characters in the books need to reflect the way people look, but they also need to dive into some of the background experiences. And kids in general just need to have more background, more experiences in life, right? More enriched play that encourages them to develop vocabulary and to develop that knowledge to be able to start to analyze. Well, this book is similar to that book, but it's not the same, right? And who wrote this book? Oh, this was, you know, right? So I totally agree with Dr. Cole and Patrick on just that whole idea of books not just reflecting you, but also you having that knowledge to be able to analyze and question what you're reading.
I don't want to turn this in. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I love the background on this piece because, you know, as an educator, I definitely see that a lot with kids, but I also question like what type of background knowledge are we talking about? And so I think like, you know, sooner you'll have Indie Echo and you'll have Natalie Pipkin and Black World Schoolers and advocates of like making sure books really reflect our children. And one of the things that I do with educators a lot is I take them through a learning experience where they have to engage in one of Nasir Jones's pieces, the rapper Nas. And educators really struggle with deciphering what he's talking about. There's a particular song, which I won't mention because it'll mess up the activity for whoever is going through it next. There's a particular song that people struggle with. And I could put Tolstoy on the screen and we'll get a whole bunch of Black educators to struggle. And I could put Nas on the screen and we'll get a whole bunch of different backgrounded educators who will struggle with the same piece. So I think when we talk about background knowledge, which is highly important, I don't want to diminish the importance of it. But I think one of the reasons we put it in the people's hands is because the simple fact that some educators will struggle with the background knowledge of Nas then shows us that it's not just about any background knowledge. We have to be clear what we're talking about here when we say background knowledge is middle class white background knowledge. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing with the literacy project is making sure that, okay, so our kids need to have that. That's some of the dominant form of background knowledge for the United States. Fine. But also, they need to know who they are and what their parents want them to be in terms of literacy, which I think is really important here. And it's how I educate my own personal kids. And I want every parent to have that freedom of saying, like, I'm going to get you this book. I'm going to craft this experience for you because it's important to our family that you're educated.
Yes. And it sounds like it's along the lines of sort of a cultural competency component when it comes to picking out reading material. For teachers, for example.
Absolutely. Anytime you're talking about thoughts, background knowledge, anytime you're talking about ideas, how people live, you can't help but to get away from cultural competency. And sometimes I think that gets conflated with race competency, and maybe, but I think mostly when we're talking about thoughts, ideas, things that people go through, we're talking about cultures, and we have to be intentional about understanding who we serve and what is important to parents and communities.
And I was going to say earlier, like, I didn't want to turn this into a therapy session for my childhood and all the things that I went through. But I was just thinking about when you talk about cultural competency, when you have, let's say, teachers who think they're doing a well-meaning job by recommending certain books to you. And you're like, well, the author is not from that background. And they're kind of taking liberty and coming up with things that are actually insulting to me. Is that also part of the issue here when it comes to getting kids engaged in reading?
I mean, when you talk about that, I think that could be one explanation for a subset of children. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, for the most part, you have to give kids books that are worthy of their time. And so when I'm going to bring up Natalie Pipkin again, she's going to be on here soon, but I rely on her for books that are worthy of my children's time. And so when she says, hey, I have this new Black Panthers graphic novel, I'm getting ready to cop that thing because I'm getting ready to give it to my kids. And so we have to understand that we have to stop looking at like traditional frameworks in order to provide literacy sources for our kids. I went to Natalie Pipkin. She's not a librarian down the street. She's a self-made library book resource right here in our community that could have easily gone overlooked because we aren't looking in the right places. And so what I know from her is she has a mindset of, and I'll let her talk more about her stuff, but this is how I understand it. She has a mindset of, we're not going to teach our children from a deficit. And what that means to me is because her kids look like mine and her kids have had similar experiences to mine. When I say, I know she was in Asante Children's Theater and my kids were in Asante Children's Theater. We believe some of the same things. I can rely on her to curate books for my children's lives. Now imagine what that does for the Indy Echo Library and the kids who have experienced similar things. Imagine what that does for a subset of our community. So I wouldn't say it's like a one thing fit all, which is why it makes sense to have this be for multiple facets of the community. For parents, you can have tutoring, you can have reading online, we can have community book circles. There's no end to what this could be, but I think the reliance on many members of the community like that allows the solutions to be nimble for a problem that is really complex.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we move into sort of the solutions for some of these things, Shale, what are some of the potential solutions you see to improve literacy in India? And I know you mentioned some of the early childhood things that parents can do. What else can we do as a community?
Educate, right? Making sure that people know the options available to them. I mean, there are grants through On My Way Pre-K. There are grants for preschools for low-income families to go to those high-quality preschools. Making sure that kids have that exposure. I appreciate what you're saying. With having somebody who's had your life experience curate books for you, somebody who can speak to your life experience, that's very profound, as well as stretching, right? So the Indianapolis Public Library is about to do a Wake Up Indy book reading program where you register online and then it encourages you to read books in different voices. Right. And so it's not a competition or anything, but it's to encourage people to read a book about the immigrant experience written by an immigrant and really stretching people to be thinking differently. So in terms of but back to the early childhood issue, I would say really one of the best things is sing with your children, talk to your children, play with your children, play with your friends' children. Talk to them, give them words for things that they are not exposed to, because it is very powerful and it does lead to reading.
Well, Charles, when it comes to the Go Farther Literacy Fund, what are some of the things you're planning next?
Well, that's Patrick is the Go Farther. I started the one in the original one in Oakland, the Oakland Literacy Fund. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you how that started, because I think it's rooted in the reason why, you know, when you talk about what's next, just so you know, I was born in Chicago. I was born in the same neighborhood as Fred Hampton. And my grandmother and great grandmother knew Fred Hampton. And the other person that lived there was Mamie Till. That's Emmett Till's mother. This is in Maywood, Illinois. So with that in my blood, and then when I finally moved to Oakland, after being homeless and living across the country and all that stuff, I went to Lafayette Elementary School, which is the exact same school that Huey P. Newton went to. And when he starts his seminal book, he starts it before he even gets into chapter one about how bad the Oakland schools were. I took this idea and built on the concept of the people, of the free breakfast program that kids across the country now benefit from. And the fact that I lived in all those shelters and had drug addled parents and was homeless, but yet and still my parents made sure I could read. Now, the system doesn't see value in those people, but I think that wouldn't you want to talk to them about how they did that with little to no resources, right? And I figured, you know, if they can do that, maybe there are some other amazing griots and educators and people in our communities that have methods for how they're getting their kids through. And in Oakland, it's one of the most expensive places to live. Gentrification is going crazy. They're getting rid of Black folks. So for the people that are surviving through that with no money, and still making sure their kids can read, that's powerful, right? Poverty can no longer be the excuse for why systems are not doing the jobs that they are intended to do. It is because of poverty that this system has to be better at making sure that these kids can read and get the things that they need. So when you ask for us, what's next? One, funding is always an issue, right? We have to get it funded to more people. And I would venture to say that the folks that I funded in Oakland and that folks that Patrick and these folks have funded here in Indy, I'd venture to say with the little bit of money that we've given them, they have far surpassed some of these programs and systems and districts that gets hundreds of thousands of dollars year over year, and they get to fail at it. And so what I would say is, one, making more people aware of this. Two, helping people to understand and see the power that they have in their own community. You know, the first thing, listen, man, people don't know this, but the highest literacy growth in this country, the rate, was directly after slavery from people, from ex-enslaved people, right, who had no money, right, who fought for their freedom to be free. This is the highest growth of literacy in this country. And it was those Black folks and those churches that put the little bit of money they had with some philanthropy and started public education. And the white planters didn't even want them to have it. They didn't believe in education. For all purposes of this talk, free public education came about because of Black folks. So there's this narrative now that Black people somehow don't care about literacy and somehow don't care about education. So I'm saying this background history actually to reflect off what Michelle and Patrick said earlier, is that you need background information. You got to know what you come from. You got to know the power of your people. You know what I mean? And I think that that's just, if you start there and you know that and you got that in your bones, we can tackle this literacy thing. And if these systems ain't coming along, we're not going to beg them to come along. I'm going to depend on my people and the structures that have always got us through in this country. And we just got to know how powerful we are. And there's power in literacy. There's a reason why they would cut off an appendage if they found you learning how to read as a slave. And we got to tell that story.
That's very powerful. And it's a great reminder for everyone who's listening. And Patrick, we have about 2 minutes left here. What are the next steps for you?
Yeah, I'm going to say one, thank you to Dr. Cole and the work that he's done. First, with a lot of folks don't know, first with his dissertation, his work with the hands on elevating the stories of how Black men came to go to college and achieve some of their dreams at the collegiate level. If you haven't read that research, go ahead and do that. And thank you for his work on the People's Literacy Fund. Folks don't know that us at the Mind Trust, we have a DEI committee that really works through our work and tries to understand what we can do as an organization that to help us become a more equitable anti-racist organization. And in that committee, we committed to doing something that was right for children in our community. And we came across Dr. Cole's work in Oakland, and that's kind of where our connection came from. I reached out to Dr. Cole and said, hey, can we get on this train? Can we get on what you're doing? And we're the first organization to say, can we get on this train? Actually, he works with an organization in Oakland, but I'm talking about the first follower that got on the train. And so the next steps for us immediately are parents in Center Township, Indianapolis. If you want, you can go to themindtrust.org and you can find the the Go Farther Literacy Project on that site. Please apply. We're looking for parents to apply and make a huge impact in their community. And then second, if you're an organization listening, if you're an organization that's interested, come talk to us about it. Come talk to Dr. Cole about it. He's accessible. Come talk to me about it. I'm accessible. I'll link you with Dr. Cole because we need more cities to make this commitment. And Dr. Cole said it on some previous broadcasts before and other places before. The more children that we can get access to this, the better. The more cities we can get access to this, the better. And the more we can get put on, the more money we can get put on this to give out to families for this cause, the better. And so this is a plea, not only to parents to apply, and we make that application process as easy as possible, we'll come to you. But also, let's go ahead and have other organizations and other cities make that commitment to their communities.
Well, I want to thank you all for taking the time this afternoon. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today, we're discussing literacy in Indiana and local efforts to teach more kids how to read. And before we get to our next guests, we have a listener voicemail from Tanya with a comment on the benefits of reading. Let's take a listen.
Hi, this is Tanya from Indianapolis. I was thinking that in addition to cultural literacy and relevance, people also need to read in order to be empathic. And that's one of the things that studies show students are lacking from generation to generation. It's becoming less and less common for students to be showing empathy. And that's something that reading does, is teach them empathy.
Well, we're going to go now to our guests, Nalene Woolley, recipient of the Mind Trust's Go Farther Literacy Fund and founder of the Indie Echo Lending Library, and Natalie Pipkin, founder of the Black World Schoolers Mobile Bookstore. Nalene, before we talk about the Go Farther Literacy Fund, what do you think about that voicemail? Do you think that reading does, in fact, lend to empathy?
I think that it can lend to empathy, and that's a wonderful thing to say, that we need to have more feelings about each other. But our Black children see a lot of feelings about them on an everyday basis. And they see there's no sympathy, there's no empathy, there's no caring, and there's total destruction in their path. So it's nice and cute to say, if I can say that, that you read a book and you'll be empathetic to the next person's problem. Books have been around all this time. The school has been around all this time. Hundreds of years, books have been there. There is no empathy, there is no sympathy, and there is no caring among the community. The book is not going to make the change.
And Natalie, your thoughts?
I was going to say, I immediately, a quote from Dr. Amos Wilson came to mind, because even for our Black children, I don't want them to just feel good. That's part of it. I don't want anybody to just feel good. And his quote says, if our study of Black history is merely an exercise in feeling good about ourselves, then we will die feeling good. We must look at lessons that history teaches us. And that's what we're missing. We want to feel good and be in these movements and these waves and rah, 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 I'm with you, but you don't want to change. We need books and stories that are going to change our thinking, way of seeing each other, way of seeing ourselves. But everybody wants to feel good. And then when it's all over, nothing has changed. So, yeah, feelings are nice, but they're not lasting. We need real change.
And they don't want the truth either. They don't want the truth. They don't want the truth to even be taught in the school system. You don't want to talk about what happened in slavery. You don't want to talk about the genocide. You want to just have the happy little story that everything was great and wonderful. If you want to change the narrative, you want to change the book. And no, I don't agree with that, but God bless her for her.
I understand it, though. I get what she's saying. Yeah.
Do you think maybe it would be, let's say, being able to teach those instead of having these topics, you know, taken out of schools, but teaching these would provide maybe empathy for folks who are learning about this?
I think truth promotes understanding and encourages conversation. And when you have relationships and can talk honestly, then empathy comes. I understand what happened to you and I'm not going through it. But now that I see it here and know that it's part of this world history, okay, let me step back from how I'm securing myself and try to understand your side of the story.
Well, when we talk about the Go Farther Literacy Fund, Nalene, I want to know what brought that about and how you got it together.
Well, I have to thank the young lady sitting across from me, Natalie Pipkin. She's also my daughter. And she brought idea to me, a form, as a matter of fact, about this literacy program that was coming forward, and you didn't have to, you could just be a regular person. And if anything, when I wake up in the morning, I'm a regular person. I'm a regular person. And she said, Mom, take a look at this. See what you can do. Literacy, you know, I have books here, and you have a church location right in the heart of the East Side community. Come up with something. What would you like to do? So she left me with that. And then she came back and asked me, what was I going to do? Did I have an idea? So we talked it through, and the idea was to have a lending library reflective of the people in our community. In that East Side community, over 75% of the people living there are African-American. We are in a church right at 30th and Forest Manor, serving those people. So it just was realistic to have something to offer them, have this library experience in the community. Yes, there are other libraries around, but you have to dig through to find out what you can read and what is reflective of you, and what's the best story, and what's going to help my situation. But if we had a library reflective of our community with stories of joy, stories of history, stories that show our people who they have been and who they can become, it just went together. It was perfect.
And Natalie, why did you encourage your mother to apply for this?
Oh, man. I mean, she's in the... First of all, we've already been doing this work way before there, you know, was a grant opportunity. I mean, she's my mom. Who I am is because of how she raised me. So a lot of how she raised me. So we're always been in community, connecting to community, seeing how we can add to community. We've done things in the past together around history, Black history, community drumming, all kinds of different things. So it's natural for us to collaborate and work together. But I brought it to her because she's at a church and they're already doing a lot of community work. They're in, you know, a food desert, literary desert. All these things are true. And they're right there on the corner. And she's always thinking of things to do there. They already do like a diaper giveaway and things like that. And she's always wanting more to do. And I'm like, this would be perfect. I mean, you're already committing to working in the community and letting that church be a light in the community. I'm already doing work alongside literacy and stories and art history. We can combine those things. You have the community. I have the resources. What can we, you know, we can do something phenomenal if we can come together.
Nalene, when you talk about being able to cultivate all these books and resources together, that's got to be pretty tough, just trying to find enough resources. Or are things getting better?
Was that directed to me or to Natalie?
Nalene.
My resource is Black World Schoolers Mobile Bookstore. I don't have to rely on my own knowledge about what books are out there. This is this young lady's life work. She knows the books. She reads the books. Her children read the books. They evaluate them. I know I'll get quality material from her. So it's a no-brainer. I don't have to scratch around and see what book will be best for the library. I go to the resource lady. She has them all there.
Well, speaking of the resource lady, Natalie, tell us about the Black World Schoolers Mobile Bookstore.
Oh, yeah. So we are we're an online store. We do pop-up shops, and we're working to become an actual mobile bookstore, a bookstore on wheels. And we center and share stories that uplift Black life, Black heritage, and Black joy for all ages. But before I was a bookstore, Black World Schoolers was a way to describe how we live and learn. 3 years ago, just over 3 years ago, we left the school system. So a lot of this talk about systems and how they've failed us and different things like that. I am a mom who decided that as hard as I worked in the school system to change things, get the books, get the curriculum, get the people on board, get the people that care, get the empathy, you know, where it needs to be. I was exhausting myself trying to change everything. And I said, all this energy that I'm using to try to change this system from the inside out and change these people's way of thinking and change the curriculum and change the library and change everything. I decided I want to put that towards educating and leading and guiding my own children. And then also seeing how we could work outside of the system to impact other children. And so that's really, since then, 3 years ago, now today, we have a bookstore. And that bookstore, Black World Schoolers, initially that the whole name was just about helping Black children positively shape how they see themselves in the world. And although Black World Schoolers is a mobile bookstore now, it's still the same thing. Yeah, so that's what we're doing. Did I answer the question?
Yeah.
I think I answered the question.
Do you still do things with schools with this effort that you have, or is it something that you're doing where people come to you and get information?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole point of a mobile bookstore. Like I said, we started off with the name. We had a social media platform that grew over the years. And our main people on our platform were educators. They were teachers. They were people who were like, oh, wow, I never thought of it like that. I didn't realize we could teach it this way, or these books were available, or we could, you know, have these discussions with children at this age. I thought we had to wait till this, you know. So our impact has been on schools, on educators and other homeschooling parents and parents in general over the past 3 years. So now with the mobile bookstore, people who were excited about what we're doing in our own little home, now we get to roll up, we get to pull up on the school and say, if you're that excited, here we are. You can utilize it as a resource. It's not something that's just exclusive to our home. Yes, this is an extension of our liberation-centered way of living and learning, and now we're able to offer it to the world, to the whole world. So yes, the mobile bookstore will provide book fairs, equitable book fairs for schools. Our mobile bookstore allows us to curate classrooms, allows us to get children and community members, period, excited about our stories, about reading in general. We're going to be a bookstore on wheels. So hardwood floors, seats, bookshelves, and everything. So I always say, think bookstore with ice cream truck energy. So we're not just bringing access and awareness to stories. We're bringing excitement and engagement around reading through our unique method of delivery. So it's a huge thing, and it will definitely impact the schools as well as just community members all around, locally and abroad.
That's really cool. And if anyone's listening and has questions or comments for our guests or the program today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. Again, that's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Nalene Woolley, recipient of the Mind Trust's Go Farther Literacy Fund and founder of the Indy Echo Lending Library, and Natalie Pipkin, founder of the Black World Schoolers mobile bookstore. Nalene, what are some of your favorite books that you think maybe folks don't know about that they should be reading?
I could change the narrative just for a moment. I'd like to commend Natalie. And the reason that I'm here is because she's always gone beyond her family. She could have stopped right at her family and just provided for her family. But we are in place because she cares about every child in our community. And so churches and organizations can put those things together, just like we did, put a library out there. And it's the books that are my favorite are our history books. I like the history books. I like the way the story is told by our own people to our own children. The story about Tulsa. We hear every year annually about how the Black Wall Street was torn down and destroyed. But we very seldom hear that it was rebuilt. We very seldom hear about the joy of the lives that were there before destruction. But we have that book. We have that book.
Opal's Greenwood Oasis. That's what you're talking about. Yes. Opal's Greenwood Oasis, talking about the history of Black Wall Street before the destruction, the joy, the lives, the people that existed, the places that existed. In a story, of course, it's a children's picture book, but it's excellent. And I'd recommend that book, and I recommend that every child read the book Itch, about Louis Mitchell and the library in New York that he, that everybody said he couldn't, I'm at the library, the bookstore he created in New York that everybody said couldn't exist because Black people don't like books and Black people don't read. And the only thing that they would give him a bank loan for was for fried chicken or fish, but not a bookstore. So he got a cart and he had a few books of his own. He started selling them and having little sayings, don't get took, read a book. And people would start buying books. And by the end of 30, 40, maybe 50 years, he had thousands of books in that bookstore. And it was a thriving bookstore because the narrative is alive. We love reading. We love our stories. We love gathering community and learning and discussing ways to liberate ourselves from the lies that have been told to us. So there's so many good books. I couldn't name them all, but I would definitely say Opal's Greenwood Oasis, and I would definitely say the book Itch are two of my favorite.
Well, Natalie, how do you curate and decide what books to carry? Is it based off of what your kids enjoyed reading or you read?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, since we've been home educating for a little over 3 years, the books are central to how we live and learn. They are our curriculum. We don't have a formal curriculum. The books are our curriculum. They spark our discussion. So yes, our bookstore mostly is of what we've already read and what we've enjoyed. And then since we've been home, of course, my children read in school because, you know, they had to read it. They knew how to read. They did not love reading, though. And then if they did read something, they read something that other kids read, you know, Diary of a Wimpy Kid or Harry Potter. And not something's so wrong with that. But when you're talking about Black children who have had their culture, their heritage distorted, you're getting your values and your way of thinking and living and doing and loving from these books. And I don't want them to get that from Diary of a Wimpy Kid. You know what I mean? So, the books they read now, since we, before the bookstore, we start curating our own home library, which is why the bookstore is important too. I want parents to curate their own home libraries. And so now from before, where they're reading one or two books on their own outside of school when they were in school, I'll give you an example. My son, who just turned 12 June 1st, year 11, this is not me forcing him. This is not me making him. This is just me curating books and saying, oh, I think I know them. They would like that. Oh, they like that. Curating our own home library. He read 40 chapter books in year 11, 40 chapter books. And I'm not talking about he read, oh, you know, just the middle grade, 8 to 12. When he's 11, he read the young adult, 12 to 18, whatever was he could understand, whatever interest him, he read all of them. Variety, sci-fi, history, historical fiction, all of them, because they're all important. The history, he's gathering the values and the stories, and then the sci-fi, the nonfiction, he gets to use his imagination. Because that's one thing some people have said, a quote that somebody said, I can't remember, but our bodies weren't just colonized, our imaginations were. So you know, our imagination, Black imagination is important too. So yes, those books are exactly what we love. And we, now that we've grown so much, we can't read them all as fast as we'd like to, but my children read them much faster than I do. So they usually pre-read them before I have. So I trust them wholly. But yes, the books are, we're looking at who's telling the story. So 99% of our books are own voices story, meaning they are written by people across the African diaspora. So that's important. Who's writing the story? What is the story trying to tell me? Because this representation matter thing, it's kind of tricky too, because I do enjoy, it's important that our children see their faces, but sometimes, especially in the schools, they just grab the first book with a Black face on it, have no idea what this story is about, even if it's from a Black author. What is this story trying to tell me though? You know what I mean? Do you need 35 stories in your classroom about hair? Do you need 45 stories in your classroom about my skin is nice? We have real things that we really need to learn. We are trying to reclaim our heritage, reclaim our culture, reclaim our imaginations, reclaim our joy. We're not going to read 75 hair books. You know what I mean? There is a time and place, and there's ones that are awesome. But we curate books based off of who's writing them, what's the story being told, how it can be discussed. You know, it's there's so much. So yeah, that is there's a lot that goes into it. We're not Amazon. We're not just grabbing books. So yeah.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us. Great discussion. Nalene Woolley, recipient of the Mind Trust's Go Farther Literacy Fund and founder of the Indie Echo Lending Library, and Natalie Pipkin, founder of the Black World Schoolers Mobile Bookstore. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.